Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Bob Inyart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and it turns out that the Forest Service, the U.S. Forest Service here in Colorado, is trying to figure out what to do with a bunch of frozen cows inside of a cabin, an old ranger cabin high in the Rocky Mountains. Turns out that during a snowstorm, these cows that were grazing in the mountains were walking by a cabin, and they either bumped into the door or the door was open. They went in the cabin, and a bunch of cows all went in like they're returning to the barn. They all went in the cabin, and when they were in there, they couldn't get out. They couldn't find their way out, and it's cold, and they couldn't move and walk. They're just standing there, and they froze to death. To the government, this is a big problem. To me, it's a bunch of frozen beef. Frozen beef. The government doesn't know what to do with all this meat. And so they're thinking of blowing up the frozen cows that died inside of this cabin. And this is true. They don't know what to do with it. They said there's a lot of snow around the cabin, and it's hard even to determine how many cows are in there. And they said time is of the essence because we don't want them to start defrosting. They're thinking either burn down the cabin or use a helicopter or use explosives to break up the cows. Now, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up. All right. The HuffingtonPost.com/Bob Inyart. There's a folder they've created there for the debate I've been in against Denver attorney Robert Corey, and we'll get to that. And then also our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. When we get to this debate that I've been in against Denver attorney Robert Corey on legalization of marijuana, which as a Christian and a pastor, I warn people about how destructive marijuana is, why we don't want to legalize it, I get into the numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau of the distribution of alcohol, and I ask people to compare that during the time of prohibition with what would have happened in the wee hours of the morning supplying the speakeasies. So an interesting topic. But let's go to the phones. In New Jersey, we don't get a lot of calls from New Jersey, so it's always an honor. In New Jersey, Louise, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Thank you.
Hi, Louise. So, hey, Louise.
Yes, Robert.
My call screener said that you're from New Jersey, but you know that in Colorado, we're trying to pass personhood and protect unborn children.
I do know that, yes.
Is it true you were on the phone while somebody was trying to get signatures earlier today?
Yes, I was.
All right, so you're familiar with what's going on here in New Jersey. So what's up, Louise?
Well, regarding abortion, I'm definitely against it.
Oh.
And I have a friend
who'd
have one, and she is suffering tremendously because of it.
Oh, no. How,
it's a
Louise?
Terrible feeling, and she has confided in me and told me that she did have an abortion, but she is suffering from it. She says she should never had it because it's bothering her.
Oh, of course,
it's
Louise.
It's bothering her.
Yeah.
As a person.
Yeah, Louise, women know even better than men do that the child in her womb is a baby.
Right.
Women know that better than men do. And we men, we have eyes. We could look at the ultrasound. We could see the baby sucking his thumb and playing with his toes. So we could see it, but there's something about being a woman, being a mom, you know, it's in the depths of your soul that this is a little boy or a little girl.
Right.
Louise, this woman, how long ago did this happen?
Oh, this was when she was a younger woman, of course. She's a little bit older now.
Oh, this is a friend of yours telling about what happened earlier in her life.
Right, exactly. But she's suffering from it.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Do you know if anyone has shared with her that she can pray to God and ask God to forgive her for what she's done?
I'm sure she, yes. In fact, I know her from my church.
Mm-hmm.
You know how the church feels about abortion.
Right, yeah, that it's wrong.
Absolutely no.
Right.
Thing is, if someone doesn't want the baby, there's so many young couples who would love to adopt the baby. I see that in a paper every day where they'll pay expenses and no questions asked.
Wow. Well, Louise, I appreciate you calling in to tell us this is such a tragedy that's been going on for so long in our country. In your life, you know, in fact, everyone, for the most part, in America has been touched one way or another with the tragedy of killing innocent children.
Right.
Thank you, Louise, very much.
You're very welcome, Robert.
I appreciate that. And Louise,
I wish you good luck.
All right. Thank you. So Louise calls me Robert. That's who I was when I was in New Jersey. So who put Louise up to calling? That's what I want to know. Because Louise is some old gal from New Jersey. It's great to have her call in and to share her concerns. And for her friend, who now, all these many years later, is still sad. All right. I want to go to the Huffington Post. You can read this. If you go to kgov.com and click on writings, there are a couple dozen articles I've written on all kinds of fun topics. One of them is why marijuana should be illegal. There's a link there to the debate I'm in at thehuffingtonpost.com, and the forum where you can go online is huffingtonpost.com/Bob Enyart, but you put a hyphen between Bob and Enyart. And I'd like to share with you some of round two in this debate against this Denver pro-marijuana attorney, Robert Corey. One of the arguments that people who promote marijuana use is that banning it doesn't help because more people drank alcohol during prohibition than without prohibition. They'll say that alcohol consumption increased. Alcoholism increased during prohibition. And I call arguments like that the big lie. The big lie, and they tell it to themselves frequently enough, and they start believing it. During prohibition in this country, it was against the law to make alcohol, to distribute it, to sell it. And so restaurants did not sell it. Inns, hotels didn't sell it. There were no liquor stores. Bars didn't sell alcohol. But then there was a criminal element. There were stills that were run illegally, and there were speakeasies where people would go after dark and they'd drink alcohol with, you know, socially. A number would get drunk, of course. Some would then go home and beat up their wife or their kids or commit a crime. There's sin in the world. You can't get rid of sin until the Lord creates a new heaven and a new earth, and everyone who hates him, they get to live without him forever, and everyone else gets to live in heaven or on the new earth. Then there will be no sin, and that will be wonderful. But until then, we live in a fallen world, and our governments are largely ineffective. But we have laws, and they don't do a great job with the laws. But the laws say, for example, don't murder. They don't do a very good job enforcing that, don't murder. And people have been murdering for a long time, but none of that means we should get rid of that law because people have always murdered and the government does a lousy job at enforcing it. So that would be a superficial analysis of the problem to say, well, let's do away with the law. One of the things that's happened is liberals and others will say that during Prohibition, the consumption of alcohol actually increased, or it certainly didn't decrease. People drank as much alcohol as they do now per capita. In the debate, I went to the U.S. Census Bureau's website, and I linked to it, and I try to give the readers an idea of how many businesses sell alcohol today. And I asked the question, can all this have happened during the 1920s and 30s illegally in the wee hours of the morning? Could you have squeezed all the activity I'm about to describe to you, could you have squeezed it all in so it was happening between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. in the dark, hiding from the police? Because today, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are more than 4,000 bars, no, not bars, there are more than 4,000 alcoholic beverage wholesalers in the country, more than 4,000 with 178,000 employees. Okay, now picture that. 178,000 employees working as alcohol wholesalers. There are more than 43,000 bars. 43,000 bars with 250,000 employees. Alcohol is also sold at more than 31,000 liquor stores with 147,000 employees. Now, you following all this so far? 4,000 alcoholic beverage wholesalers with 178,000 employees, 43,000 bars with 250,000 employees, 31,000 liquor stores with 147,000 employees, and alcohol is sold in 100,000 grocery stores, hotels, casinos, airplanes, and restaurants with a mature industry distribution channel employing thousands of warehouses and a fleet of tens of thousands of modern 18-wheelers. So you adjust for population all you want. And even if we had no evidence of a decrease in crime, alcohol-related crime during Prohibition, which we do have evidence of a decrease, even if we had no evidence of a decrease in cirrhosis of the liver during Prohibition, which we do have evidence of a decrease, but even if we had no evidence at all, nobody kept records, we knew nothing about during this time of Prohibition, the very laws of physics falsify the misconception that Prohibition didn't decrease alcohol consumption. There is no way that America's massive Budweiser, Coors, Bacardi, Gallo, mega industries, and their alcohol distribution system could be compressed into a secret criminal endeavor supplying speakeasies in the wee hours of the night. There's just no way. It's not possible. When alcohol was made illegal, would it have stopped alcoholics from drinking alcohol? No, it wouldn't. There would still be people who would drink and abuse alcohol, get drunk, and commit crimes. But the vast majority of people, as they go about their normal business, they're not going to be drinking alcohol. When they go to a restaurant, when they go to a hotel and check in, they're generally not going to be ordering a bottle of wine with their dinner. Is the argument then that we need to bring back Prohibition and recriminalize alcohol? No, not at all. And through this round two of the debate, I explain why and the difference between alcohol and marijuana. Now, what I'd like to do is jump to the beginning of my round two post at thehuffingtonpost.com. And share some of this with you. I begin this way to Robert Corey. Yes, long-term pot use leads to disorganized thinking. Yes. In fact, I link to a study that shows this is a peer-reviewed scientific study that when people smoke pot over a long period of time, their mental faculties decrease, and it takes a week or a month of not smoking before their head clears up and they could think as clearly as someone who doesn't smoke pot. And that's a refereed journal paper on the subject. So yes, long-term pot use leads to disorganized thinking. But can't at least one person out of the thousand commenting here on HuffPo, Huffington Post, can't you recognize how arbitrary you all are? Hundreds of angry comments hit one side of this debate for mentioning God, but not a peep is heard against the pro-pot lawyer for quoting the Bible. My opponent, Robert Corey, and the HuffPot readers, posting comments, are making arguments that have nothing to do with right and wrong. And when Robert Corey quotes the Bible, they don't complain. When a Christian quotes the Bible, their eyes start burning. They go ballistic. And I ask, can't you guys see how arbitrary you are? But they do not make arguments based on right and wrong. So I'll continue. The sum total of everything they've said cannot possibly determine whether it is right or wrong to decriminalize marijuana. All who claim that right and wrong are irrelevant, which the other side does, can no longer argue that the anti-pot side is wrong. They can't do it. When you say there's no such thing as right or wrong, you cannot then say, well, you're wrong. But this is something that many on that side, that they can't think through. They don't understand that. All they have left then, once they lose the ability to say your position is wrong, all they have left then is raw force. That's it. So if there are fewer level heads in the public than there are potheads and their supporters, then by majority rule, they just might be able to decriminalize marijuana. That might happen. Speaking of majority rule, while reading Mr. Corey and the many comments to our debate, I see that marijuana advocates are very familiar with our founding fathers. They'll recall that the majority once approved of laws allowing men to own other men as property. And those who are quoting leaders from back then, they tell of this pre-Civil War belief that hemp, the marijuana plant, that hemp could have saved the world. That's what they, you know, hemp could save the world. And that's, I hear it to this day. It would fix the world's economy. It would end hunger. It would end disease. It would end the nuclear arms race. Hemp would save the world. That's what they say, except for cruel prejudice against the plant. Other than that, it would save the world. Today, all those who think majority rule should replace absolute right and wrong, they reject in principle the very concept that smoking pot might theoretically be wrong. They reject that in principle. But you know what then? They sure can't claim that slavery was wrong either, unless they're smoking at the time. Then they could claim anything. So I appeal to those who know and to those who are still open to the possibility that right and wrong actually exist. I think Mr. Corey would agree with me that thou shalt not murder is not just a good idea, it's the law. And it was the law even before any constitution or king said so, as per the very book that my opponent quoted from. for those who oppose legislating morality, as all the commenters are saying on the Huffington Post, those who oppose legislating morality, I hope that they will be inconsistent when it comes to rape, kidnapping, stealing, and murder. Right? Don't we want them to be inconsistent? We don't want them to be consistent. When it comes to rape and kidnapping and murder, they say, well, you can't legislate morality. Well, guys, please be inconsistent when we're talking about laws against kidnapping, all right? Because it's immoral to kidnap a child. It's immoral. It's immoral to murder someone. It's immoral to rape or to steal. So the people who say you can't legislate morality, they're fools. But thankfully, they're not consistent. Thankfully, they don't try, therefore, to decriminalize rape, kidnapping, and murder. For God's enduring commands include, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not bear false witness, which we call perjury. And also from Exodus, thou shalt not kidnap, which alone, that one law, if enforced by our government, would have prevented America's slave trade. That one law, thou shalt not kidnap, because our slave trade was fueled by the kidnapping of blacks from Africa. Then I have a few subtitles. The first is money, because these are the topics my opponent highlighted. Money, freedom, safety, and children. So, money. Apparently, conceding the higher ground of right and wrong to the anti-pot side, my side, Mr. Corey's argument to decriminalize pot is arbitrary. Money. He wrote, quote, the war on marijuana cost us money, unquote. Yes. So do our efforts to prevent murder. And the government does a lousy job deterring that too. But that's not a reason to decriminalize murder. And for those who are currently smoking, I am not comparing smoking pot to murder. I'm testing the form of Robert's argument. It costs a lot. It's not working. We should give up. So let's give up as far as violent crime goes because we're blowing it. So let's decriminalize violent crime. Freedom. In his next section, Mr. Corey tells us that, quote, marijuana prohibition was born out of racially charged fears of Mexicans and blacks, unquote. Wow. But he forgets to add that therefore cocaine law must be targeting attorneys, since cocaine is the lawyer's drug of choice. Why doesn't he add that? Shows how silly his argument is. And I appreciate Mr. Corey quoting from Genesis chapter 1. Although his references get a different response. When I mention God, it burns the eyes of our readers, like tossing holy water at a vampire. And this is what Robert Corey wrote. God gave man every seed-bearing plant. They were good. And the Lord gave them to man for food. So I linked to Genesis there. But don't stop there, Robert. Keep reading. Just till chapter 3. Just turn the page. Man's rebellion destroyed the original paradise. The ground was cursed. That's why today the earth has many dangerous plants. And I link to a Wikipedia article on dangerous plants, which lists 100 plants that will destroy you, your body, and your mind. Reading a bit further explains why it is wrong to offer hemlock or intoxicants to our friends. That's in Genesis. Then again, arbitrarily, Mr. Corey fails to test his own argument with other illicit behaviors, like sexual assault in prison. He argues, quote, if the government cannot keep marijuana out of jail, can anyone seriously argue prohibition is enforceable in the general population? Well, the same could be said for rape. And again, stoners. I'm not comparing getting high to rape. I'm exposing Mr. Corey's reasoning as arbitrary. The government can't stop sexual assault in prison, so what makes anybody think they could stop it in the general public? Then safety, the next topic. And here, too, of course, Mr. Corey would not apply many of his own arguments to other behaviors, like trafficking in children or killing the innocent. He writes, human demand for marijuana has lasted thousands of years and will never go away. And I write, so what? The same is true for human demand for innocent blood or sex trafficking. So what? The arguments, not being based on right and wrong, are meaningless. His final section is children. He writes, it is literally easier for American school children to obtain marijuana than beer, unquote. What does that have to do with anything? It's easier for students to steal cars than buy them. It's easier for students to cheat rather than earn an A, and to get pregnant rather than buy pornography. So what? These are arbitrary observations that obscure the underlying issues of right and wrong. Ending the pot prohibition will affect kids because consumption will increase. Pot propaganda and studies alleging that during prohibition, cirrhosis of the liver and crime didn't decrease all that much. They claim that prohibition doesn't work anyway. Well, why do they do that? No one would get noticed reporting that it gets darker after dusk, nor that prohibition reduced alcohol consumption. Nobody's going to get famous that way or get quoted. So we add to that the decades of pro-pot bias on universities, and it's amazing that any studies admit an increase in alcohol-related problems since prohibition ended. So we already looked at the hundreds of thousands of businesses that sell alcohol with a million employees, and we pointed out earlier in the show that you simply cannot compress all that to make all that happen in some criminal enterprise that functions during the wee hours of the morning. It's just not possible. So consumption of pot would increase with decriminalization, just as medical marijuana has already led to Colorado's stoned driving epidemic, as reported in the Huffington Post. Then as parents get high, as with pot, alcohol, or any substance, they become a threat to their own children and to neighbors, emergency workers, and so on. And as a result, more kids will suffer. So if somebody's a marksman and they like to go shooting downtown at the park, it doesn't matter the fact that they say, well, I'm a good aim and I haven't hurt anybody. It simply doesn't matter because God doesn't require us to put up with that kind of increased risk. The same thing with substances that are designed to get people high, the normal use of which makes people high. And you know what? The guy wants to shoot his gun in City Park. It doesn't matter if you're going to kill his buzz. It just doesn't matter. Hey, if you want to find out more, it's at kgov.com/pot or huffingtonpost.com/bob-enyart. This is Bob Enyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.